Ultimate Trivia Podcast. This is the Ultimate Trivia Podcast, where knowledge is optional and laughter is used mainly to mask our emotions. Maybe the shame, the ignorance. I am your host tonight, Nick, for doing something a little different. I'm taking over the entire show. It might get a little uncomfortable even, because I don't think I'm very well prepared for this.
But you're doing better than Andy has.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Dang it. Dagger.
Yeah.
Everybody's here tonight. Andy, Brian, Kelly, the good doctor, and even our new producer, Miss Amy.
Producer Amy.
Pro-Am.
That's going to become a thing.
Yeah. How are you boys doing?
Awesome.
Let's hear from you. Say something to the people. Let's go.
Yeah. Hi, people.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Europe.
Europe who?
No, Europe who.
Oh, that was a good one.
Nailed it.
We just lost 12 listeners.
Were they all in middle school?
I was going to say, we gained a bunch.
It's a good one for the kids. It was a little something for the kids.
Andy, how we doing?
Yeah, awesome. Just got out of a chorus concert from my kid. That was
fantastic.
And it's really cool. No, it was awesome.
Of course. That was
but no, it's really cold outside. I'm going hunting tomorrow. Hey, listeners, guess what? Now they can only make fun of me for not shooting a turkey because I got my first deer.
Fine. That's true.
And Andy, I was proud of you because the same day you killed that deer, one of our listeners' sons, who's like 10, mm-hmm. also killed a deer.
I saw that on Facebook.
Good job.
Yeah, you're as good as a 10-year-old.
Yep.
Good
job. I'm a real boy.
I think it was his first day doing it.
Now we're being protested by PETA.
Yeah, right. I know.
Doc, how you doing tonight?
Yeah, doing great. All excited right. to have you lead us tonight, Nick.
I don't know if I'm excited about it, but let's go ahead and do this. So I don't have a question of the week. Instead, I'm doing something a little different.
Oh, I love it.
Two truths and a lie. You guys familiar? Any idea?
Yeah.
All
right. Common icebreaker.
Okay. So basically, I'm going to give you three kind of short stories, and then you guys are going to discuss and try to tell me which one you guys think is true.
Are these about you?
No. Okay. Nothing to do with me.
Dang.
Good.
More in line with our show topic, you know, world history, you know, that kind of thing.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, a little bit of that.
Okay.
All right. So the first one. In 1994, the U.S. Air Force.
True.
The U.S. Air Force's Wright Laboratory requested $7.5 million to develop a gay bomb.
What?
The plan.
You're not allowed to say that.
I got this straight from the internet. Okay. So that means it's got to be accurate. And that's what they called it. So the plan was to drop a bomb loaded with strong female pheromones onto the enemy troops, causing them to become sexually irresistible to each other.
Oh.
All right. Creating mass chaos and then causing them to stop fighting and basically just start flirting with each other.
Sounds like something from Austin Powers.
Right. It does.
True. I was there. It worked.
Welcome to my life.
Wow. So we'll call that one. We'll just call that one the love bomb.
Leader in the clubhouse. I realize it's only the first one. But.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Number two. This one, I will call this the nightmare tool. The chainsaw was not originally invented for chopping down trees. It was invented by two Scottish doctors in the 1780s to help with childbirth. So before C-sections were safe, if a baby was stuck, doctors used a small hand-crank chainsaw to cut through the woman's pelvic bone to widen the birth canal.
Oh, dear.
It's true.
Mm. There's two.
I mean, the medicine was savage back in the day, man.
I mean, look at dentists. They're still scraping your teeth with metal.
Metal picks. All right, here's the third one. All right. This one we're going to call it a tipsy turkey. In an effort to boost morale during the Civil War, President Lincoln issued a decree that all turkeys served to the Union soldiers on Thanksgiving must be fed whiskey for 3 days prior to the slaughter in order to tenderize, flavor the meat, and provide a little bit of booze-enhanced morale to the soldiers.
Really? Well, you don't know really, right?
But that sounds real. You don't know at this point.
I'm going with the first one is a lie because if that happened in the 50s or any earlier than 94, I would totally agree with that. But that's my guess.
Okay. Doc, what do you think?
So are you saying that maybe it's partially true? That it, you know what I mean? Like you just change one little piece of information and it becomes a lie.
Oh, yeah.
I tried to write these words all or none.
Okay.
So, So, like the year, it's not like, oh, no, it actually happened in 1952. Okay.
I think it's all a lie, but I think it's more plausible or believable if it happened in the way before 1994. Sure.
Yeah. They were probably, you know, back when they were actually trying to reduce the amount of gay people, I imagine. Yeah. Hmm. B, what do you think?
I think I'm with Kelly. I think the
number one,
the gay bomb, because the year. That sounds like something they do.
Seems too recent.
Yeah. I'm gonna go with that one.
I'm with them. The other two are ridiculous, but they're like, you can think your way through that a little bit.
I feel like I've seen I never thought it was a chainsaw. I didn't see the end of the tool, but I feel like I've seen that hand cranking tool.
Yeah. Okay. It's an egg beater, I think, is what you're thinking of course. Sure.
Okay. That's a
I guess I should have looked up a picture of it because it said chain. It said chainsaw, so I guess there was actual chain on it and everything.
Right? I mean, they're trying to get through bones.
Sounds pretty brutal.
Yeah,
and I've already forgotten the third one. What was the third one?
It was the drunken turkey one.
That's the third one.
They were giving him bourbon.
So that one I was thinking was true because trying to save money, and that way you're not giving the whiskey directly to the soldiers. You're doing it via turkey.
I didn't really think of that.
Did they think they were going to get a little drunk off of eating a turkey that's been cooked?
Long time ago.
Yeah, that's true. Science was different.
All right. So Kelly says gay bomb is false or fake. So does Brian.
Yeah.
Andy, you think the same. Doc, what'd you end up with?
I think it's that, but I just want to be different. So I'm going to go and say the turkey's a lie.
All right. Okay. We do have a correct answer.
Oh, turkey?
The turkey is the fake one.
Wow.
That is the fake one.
Gosh, I feel so bad to be American right now. Yeah. I mean, that's crazy.
No, there was like
nothing past our government.
Not in the 90s, especially.
There was a whole thing. Like, I was reading this. Like, they had like a chemical they were going to release to give soldiers halitosis, so they had bad breath, I guess. Yeah, they really had some terrible ideas, and they asked for this money.
Wow. World War II, the condom thing.
Oh, yeah, propaganda.
That's a true story.
The Americans dropped airplanes, loads of condoms in the German territory, and they labeled all the huge ones, like magnums, medium, so the Germans would think the Americans had huge... it's factual.
Everything
that might be in Nick's facts coming up, because that's funny.
Well, is interesting, World War II is the inflatables. You ever see this? Where they had inflatable tanks and they were fake just to make... Like, that's genius, really. That like, to make it look like they were set up over here and they weren't. Like, pretty cool.
So, the whole Air Force asking for money to make a bomb to make soldiers get attracted to each other. They also were going to do one that was called Sting Me, Attack Me. And that one was supposed to, I guess, anger wasps around the enemies. Which I thought was interesting. The halitosis one, which is just weird to me.
That's a strange one.
The whole chainsaw thing, that's real.
You can see that.
That truly happened.
I mean, that heroin.
I can see that.
And then, the fake one was, Lincoln never ordered whiskey, drunken turkeys for the soldiers.
Okay. That gives me a little bit of faith in the science of the mid-1800s.
Yeah, but 150 years later, we're dropping love bombs.
That's true.
Love good bombs point. Makes it sound awesome.
Love bombs.
I found those kind of fun.
Yeah, that was awesome.
You like that?
Keep going. Good.
All right. Well, no, that's all I got.
That was it?
Oh, yeah.
Right. That was the only one.
I only did
the
one.
I can't wait till next week.
Two truths and a lie, you know? Yeah. No, that's all I got. So
it's a good one. I like the...
Yeah, I thought it was something different. Wanted to try it out.
I like it.
Yeah. So we could move on to trivia. The topic is, I don't think I've announced all of you guys, it is History of the World Part 1.
That's a long time.
Love that movie.
Yeah, very fun.
That too. That too. So if you guys are ready, Andy, ring the bell.
No synopsis.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. I guess I should do that.
You just gave it. History of the World.
I could read a synopsis. I did write one.
Okay.
You did?
It's not too wordy.
Good.
It's ridiculous. In this episode, we uncover the threads that connect humanity across time. Ideas, discoveries, revolutions, and ruins. From the first traces of civilization to the mysteries that still baffle modern minds. These trivia questions explore how humans have built, recorded, and questioned the world around them. Some answers are obvious. Others lie buried beneath layers of myth and memory. One thing is certain. You'll never look at history quite the same again. The show is not that impactful, I promise.
Wow. I mean, that's
you're making history come alive over there, brother.
Yeah. Man. I'll never look at you the same again.
All right, let's do it. It's time for the main event, our 10-question trivia game on the history of the world, part one. Here's how it works. Nick is our host tonight. He's going to read the question. The rest of us are going to write our answers on our whiteboard, and when he says reveal, we will show him our whiteboards. If we get it right, who's giving us the point tonight?
I will.
Okay, Ray. And if we get it wrong, that is when the real fun begins. So let's see who ends up on top today. And as we have done now, we are starting with our donation recognition. Who are we doing tonight, Pro-Am?
Well, tonight our donor is anonymous. So thank you to whomever sent the donation. And Kelly, will you tell us a little bit about this week's beer of choice?
Yeah, tonight we have a beer called Southern Draw from the Great Raft Brewing in out of Shreveport, Louisiana. Let's see, there's a couple of little facts about that. Southern Draw is one of the Great Raft's 4 year-round flagship beers and was part of the original core lineup when Great Raft became the first brewery to sell locally brewed beer in Shreveport since Prohibition back in 2013. That's when they started
cornered
selling
the market
beer.
Right after Prohibition.
Yeah.
Wait. First beer brewed there since Prohibition. It was 2013. Yeah. Wow. They took their time. Good.
Crisp, assertive, and unique.
Assertive. I do like an assertive.
I got one more little fact I thought was cool.
It better be good.
The label art, rocking chair, banjo, front porch scene, was designed by Justin Helton of Status Serigraph, the same artist who does posters for bands like the Avett Brothers and Old Crow Medicine Show.
Ah, cool. Yeah.
Right. Very cool. Very cool.
All right. Thank you, listener.
Thank
for
you,
that
listener.
Great
cheers.
Donation. Yeah. If you want to give us a donation, you can click on the link right at the top of the
I'm
show.
I'm okay
notes.
With that.
Yeah, that's a pretty good drink.
No,
man.
I really like that.
Yeah.
Not too hoppy or anything. That's not
it's
bad.
A mad dash for the sixth one. It's in the it's in between the it's like spoons.
It's already at Brian's arsenal. Yeah.
All right. Let's get after it. Nicholas.
All right. Question one. And I'll tell you this, question one is not indicative of the rest of the show. No. I promise you. Like these are not they don't have a twist to them. This one a little bit does, but all right. What unexpected profession was held by, it's so hard to say the name, basically it's George Lemaître, who first proposed the Big Bang Theory in conjunction with being a cosmologist.
What was his profession?
So what was his unexpected profession along with being a cosmologist? He was the first person to propose the Big Bang Theory.
No idea.
So basically he was a scientist, and what else was he? That's the question. I don't know if you ever heard of this guy. I just found this kind of interesting.
No.
So I threw it out there.
And I'm not giving it any thought. Yeah. I had one profession immediately enter my mind, and I wrote it down. Yeah.
I feel like the rest of this episode, you guys will do pretty well.
Yeah, the pressure's on.
Pretty well, but I did not give you a layup. All right. Everybody looks like they have an answer. So we're looking for the second profession of George Lemaître, who first proposed the Big Bang Theory. Let's reveal. Andy with florist, Brian has shoemaker, also known as a cobbler.
Yeah, well.
I know that much. We got a brewmaster from Kelly and a barber from Scott. Unfortunately, you guys are all wrong. He was a priest.
Oh, okay.
Oh, what?
That's why I found it interesting.
That is crazy. Oxymoron.
Actually, yeah, amen to that.
The first guy to propose basically the Big Bang Theory was also a Catholic priest.
My goodness.
Oh, that is interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, which one did he not believe?
Yeah. Well, he thought they were compatible with each other, science and religion.
Well, sure.
Okay. Yeah. I can respect that.
Do you agree?
I don't think they have to be mutually exclusive. No.
Right.
No, they don't.
Well, science
that's a whole different,
is what it is.
That's a whole different podcast.
Is there something more that we don't understand? Probably.
God made science, right?
Sure.
Okay. I'll give you that.
Yeah. This is heading down a terrible path.
Yeah. I don't have a ton of like fun facts about this guy. He was a priest. I just found that very interesting. Cool. He did speak 7 languages.
Basically,
he gave it the Big Bang Theory before Einstein ever did. So pretty much on the forefront.
Cool. Yeah.
Kind of big deal. All right. Well, you guys went over on that one. That's fine. We'll go to question number two. You'll do better with this one. Which ancient civilization is credited with creating the earliest known form of writing, laying the foundation for recorded history? So we're looking for an ancient civilization that is credited with creating the earliest known form of writing. Deep in thought.
What should the answer be? A civilization?
Which ancient civilization?
Yeah.
What was that? What, how does that clarification help you?
Instead of like listening to country,
for example. Yeah. Civilization. Yeah. Not territory or.
Right.
Yeah.
China.
No. It looks like everybody has an answer. So we're looking for the ancient civilization that is credited with creating the earliest known form of writing. Let's reveal. Doc has the Mayans, Sumerians from Kelly, Egyptian from Brian, and Egyptians from Andy. It is the Sumerians.
Sumerians.
That is well one done. For Kelly.
Hey, Neoform.
What'd you call me?
What did you just say?
Neoform?
What's it? Cuneiform.
Cuneiform. That I have heard.
Cuneiform.
I don't know exactly what it is.
But Nick doesn't have that.
I don't know if I have that in here. Let me try to read this. Do I have cuneiform?
Doing great, Nick.
I could be wrong.
I didn't know if it was actually pronounced cuneiform or cuneiform. I don't know how to
pronounce
it. C-U-N-I-E-F-O-R-M.
I got nothing.
No?
I think really it probably doesn't matter.
Yeah. It probably doesn't matter. So, yes, the Sumerians are credited with being the earliest known form of writing. They also invented the 60-number system that influenced modern timekeeping, like 60 minutes and geometry and 360 degrees, that kind of stuff. And interesting, I think, it was on the last one, they were also brewmasters. Oh. So they could write and they could drink.
Cool. What region were they from, Kelly?
The Sumer Valley between the Tigris and Euphrates.
It's Mesopotamia?
Iraq-Iran area.
It is now considered
Iraq. Mesopotamia, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Iraq. So
3200 BCE, what is now is Iraq, the Sumerians began pressing symbols into wet, like clay.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how they, that was their form writing.
Emojis.
Yeah. there you go. Right.
We've come full circle.
All right. We're going to move on to question number three. What landmark document signed in 1215, that would be either AD or whatever now they call, what do they call it? There's AD and was there CE or something like that? Anyway, so 1215, under the threat of rebellion, became a cornerstone of constitutional law by limiting the power of a king. So we're looking for a landmark document signed in 1215. All right. Under a threat of rebellion, became a cornerstone of constitutional law by limiting the power of a king.
Man.
Kelly answered really fast.
100%.
Oh, he feels real good. Brian's deep in thought.
I use an answer.
Andy is mulling it over.
I used to use it. Well, not anymore. I won't for a lot of codes.
Interesting. Doc, you got an answer?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out how to spell it.
I don't feel you're right then if you don't know how to spell this.
No clue. What was the year? 1265?
1215. The year of our Lord, 1215.
Okay.
Does everybody have an answer?
I'm
good.
Yeah.
B?
Yeah, nothing.
Drawing hard blank. All right. So we're looking for the document signed in 1215 under the threat of rebellion became a cornerstone of constitutional law by limiting the power of the king. Let's see some answers. We have the Magna Carta from Andy, from Kelly, from Scotty. B abstained. The correct answer is the Magna Carta.
Hey, all right.
Good job.
Yeah.
You guys are smart.
Thanks. That felt good. That felt smart.
You guys are really smart.
You didn't know how to spell Magna Carta, or did you change it because he said that?
No, I was doubting myself on Carta. That's all.
Okay. Oh, we got the gist of it. Would you have a K?
Maybe.
Would you think a K?
Mango cart.
It just didn't look right.
On the brain.
It's like when you write a word and it doesn't look right.
Mm-hmm. Most of my answers feel that way.
Like refrigerator.
Like refrigerator.
Why is there no D in refrigerator, but there is in fridge?
So the Magna Carta. I don't know a ton about this document other than it failed immediately. The Pope annulled it, but that led to a civil war. Only three original clauses remain in English law today. It established the crucial principle that the king is not above the law. Mm-hmm. That's rule of law.
I like it.
And it heavily influenced our own constitution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can see it.
Yeah. Anything else you guys know about the Magna Carta?
You have taught me everything I know about it.
All right.
Other than it existed.
I do know that there was a big meeting in Bury St. Edmund in England where they decided to move forward with this, and I have been to Bury.
What was the last thing you said?
Bury St. Edmund.
Okay.
I've been to Bury.
Gotcha. You've been to Bury.
I've been there. Yes. Yeah. I have visited there. That's where the world's smallest bar is located.
Oh,
Bury St. Edmund. Yeah.
Told that story.
I have. All right. Was that three?
Correct.
Oh, no, you're the host.
Hey, there's five of us. You guys can help. All right, number four. Here we go. Which Roman city was catastrophically buried under volcanic ash in 79
CE or AD, preserving eerie snapshots of daily life. So it's a Roman city buried under volcanic ash in the year 79.
Man, it took a minute.
It took a minute.
I just couldn't remember the stinking name of it. I knew it. I've
been there, brother. Been there many a times on this show. Too many times.
Yeah, I know. Almost pulled a Nick.
People probably think I'm really stupid. All right, one more time. So we're looking for the Roman city that was catastrophically buried under volcanic ash in the year 79. Let's go ahead and reveal. We have from Doc, Pompeii from Kelly, Pompeii from Brian, and from Andy. Yeah. You are all correct.
Vesuvius.
It is Pompeii.
Thank you for spelling it right, too, Scott.
You're welcome.
I put two eyes and I erased the second eye because that's ridiculous. Why do you got two eyes?
Two eyes is dumb.
Don't be pompous.
Why would you need a second eye?
Is that where that word came
second
from?
Second one got buried.
Yeah. Pompous come from Pompeii?
I don't know.
Pompeii, and then it's Pompeii, and you have two eyes. That makes absolutely no sense.
Absolutely.
Hawaii has two eyes.
I do not like that. I mean, we all know Pompeii. Or you've seen the movie, maybe. Has anybody seen the movie?
I think so.
Yeah. Nope.
Documentaries, but I haven't seen the movie, no.
Yeah. I think the dude from...
Wait a minute. Don't tell me how it ends.
Too soon. Too soon.
I think it's a guy. I think one of the guys from
76 AD or something.
That's like an 79. Uplifting title.
My uncle is.
It's a comedy, right? A romantic comedy.
I do believe there's a romance element to it.
I do believe. Yeah, didn't they find in real life they found them huddled up together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they've still found food in ovens all kinds of crazy stuff.
Maybe
it was like frozen in time. Kind of the interesting part of it. I don't really care for the flavor text I have on this, so we'll skip ahead to number 5. You guys ready?
Yep.
All right. What artifact discovered in Egypt in 1799 proved key to deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphs by presenting the same text in 3 scripts? So we got an artifact. It's discovered in Egypt, the year 1799. It proved to be a key to deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphs by presenting the same text in 3 scripts. I know. What is this artifact? Andy's locked. So is Kelly. Doc looks like he's locked.
Mine's wrong.
I'm sorry. Can you read it one more time?
Yeah. So we're looking for an artifact that was discovered in Egypt back in 1799. And it proved to be a key to deciphering Egyptian hieroglyphs by presenting the same text 3 times. And 3 scripts, I mean.
Yeah, 3 different.
3 different
languages
scripts.
Languages or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kelly, you know who found it?
I wouldn't say it because there's a bonus to this question.
Oh, what?
There's a bonus.
I wasn't going to say it anyway.
Yeah, no, it's Indiana Jones.
Dr. Jones. Idiot. Brian, how you feeling? You got nothing?
I can't come up with it.
You're gonna kick yourself a little when you hear it. All right.
I'm sure.
So... Written. There is a bonus question, so we will reveal the answer, then I'll give you guys the bonus question.
Okay.
So if we get the first part wrong...
Well, you know what? No, good idea. So the bonus part.
Part 2.
All right. This artifact was discovered by a soldier. What country did this soldier belong to?
Oh, you curveballed me.
Yes. Well, if you know the name, I'm sure you can figure out what country. So what country was the soldier that, quote-unquote, discovered this, what country did he serve?
Gotcha.
You guys all got that?
Yeah. Right now. Hang on.
Okay, so the 1799. Let me do some
1799
some thinking. Yeah, I have one. Do you know the country, Andy? You know the guy's name?
I mean, I know who found it. And I know where he's from, and it is a dude.
So then you do know what country it is.
I assume so.
Oh, okay. Well, that's what he asked you. It was a yes or no question. You did not get one of those two options.
Have I ever?
All right. So let's go ahead and reveal. Andy with Rosetta Stone, France. Rosetta Stone, England from Kelly. And King Tut's Tomb, France from Scotty. We have one truly, fully correct answer. What? It is Andy.
Napoleon.
Because it was... The Rosetta Stone, and it was a French soldier.
So
Napoleon
are we getting
Bonaparte's army.
So point. You get... I would say this, no bonus unless you got the first part right. So the two got Rosetta Stone get a single point, and if you got the bonus, you get an additional point. So Andy gets 2, Kelly gets 1, Doc and Brian, unfortunately, you guys did not get on the board with that one. So the Rosetta Stone. Kelly, I feel like you should know a lot about the Rosetta Stone. I don't know why, but I think you do.
No, I know about the gist of that. You know, that's how they cracked the code for hieroglyphics. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing it's known for sure.
And it's a new app for learning new languages.
Yeah,
that's also true.
One of the OGs, actually. It was a computer program for a long time.
So it contains the same decree written in three different scripts. The hieroglyphs, Demotic, I guess, would be the Egyptian cursive and ancient Greek. So what it said was it listed the good deeds of King Ptolemy V. It listed, it said, priests grant him and his family special honors and privileges, including a statue, tax amnesty for priests. So even back then, they were going, tax exempt because they're, charitable, if you want to call it that. And orders the text to be inscribed in three different scripts and placed in every major temple across Egypt.
Mm.
So that's what that's what the actual scripts.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Thanks. What's the name of the soldier? You said you knew the name.
I didn't know the. So it's either Napoleon or it was Napoleon's army that found it. And that's what I knew the fact of, which led me back to France.
So you didn't know it was Pierre Francois Bouchard.
I did not know that.
If you did, you would have known that was a French name.
Yeah. Yeah, amen.
Well, if I recall, that is five. Let's hear from our sponsors. All right. And we're back. Kelly. Can I get a score check?
All right, we'll start. Brian's got one. Scott, the good doctor, has two. And then with that bogus bonus question, Andy tied it up. Me and him both have four.
Awesome. Oh, boy.
Making a game of it.
All look like blind drives.
And my bonus was not bogus. All right, question number six.
Just one letter difference.
What do you mean?
Bonus, bogus.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about England versus France. That didn't compute for me.
Nick doesn't get spelling jokes.
I don't.
It was on the Rosetta Stone.
I don't get spelling. All right. What ancient Mesopotamian city, whose name translates to Gate of God, was famous for its massive ceremonial entry point, the Ishtar Gate, and its historical location of the legendary Hanging Garden?
A lot of words.
That is. So it's an ancient Mesopotamian city, translates to Gate of God. It's famous for its entry point called the Ishtar Gate and its historical location of the legendary Hanging Gardens.
There you go.
Andy looks confident.
Oh, yeah. Hondo.
Kelly?
I don't know if I spelled it right.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I spelled it right. So
You're good at spelling, Kelly. I got to give you that.
I'm in. I was complimenting you today.
B?
Not sure why I'm here.
You're not feeling any of this?
Not sure why I'm here. Nope, nothing.
Oh, wow. Doc?
Nope.
You two should both get this.
Like, so every... I'll just tell you this. Every question other than like the first one, you've heard the answers before. Like I didn't get anything out of the woodworks. So we're looking for an ancient city. Come on, you got an ancient city in that head of yours, don't you? Just some ancient city?
Nah. I'm good.
All right. Does everybody have an answer?
Yep.
Yes, sir.
All right. Let's go ahead and reveal Andy with Babylon, spelled terribly.
Yeah.
We have Babylon from Kelly, spelled correctly, and Cairo from Doc.
Why would you put a Y in the middle of the damn word? It doesn't make any sense. It's not Babylon.
Well, apparently it is.
It's spelled that way because the correct answer is Babylon.
Babylon.
Oh, Kelly and Andy with the correct answer. Yeah.
The Hanging Gardens. I started writing Babylon within the first three words. Yeah. And then the gate thing threw me because I thought maybe it was the Rhodes thing. And then when it got to Hanging Gardens, that's...
Oh, okay.
The Hanging Gardens of Babylon.
That's one of the seven wonders of the ancient world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't remember. Oh, I mean, it could be. I'm sure it's in
there. Although it's disputed on the actual location of these Hanging Gardens.
Ah.
Did you know that?
No, sir.
Nobody knows.
Yeah. Nobody, that's right. So Babylon wasn't just a city. It was a symbol of majesty and mystery. Its walls were said to be wide enough for chariots, and its gardens may have floated like dreams above the desert. I am poetic.
Wow.
Just comes out of my mouth so well. I did find this cool. So it's home of the Hammurabi Code, which was the original eye for an eye principle.
It's one of the ancient texts that's basically a lot of laws are based off of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ancient scrolls of Babylon. I have heard of that.
Yeah. I thought about asking what the Hammurabi code was as my bonus question for this one.
Nice.
But you could have said eye for an eye, you could have said tooth for a tooth or something like that, most people probably didn't even know.
Do unto others as you want them to do unto you.
All right. Let's move on to question number seven. Which ancient Greek battle fought in 490 BC is famously associated with the legend of a messenger who ran a great distance to announce victory and inspired the modern Olympic sport? So
I got it. I just
want ancient Greek battle.
How to answer it?
So, ancient Greek battle fought in 490 BC, yeah. Famously associated with the legend of a messenger who ran a great distance to announce victory and inspired the modern Olympic sport. Kelly's writing. So is Andy. Doc is writing.
No.
Brian just threw in the towel completely.
I'm done.
You're done. You're just here for comedy and beer at this point.
Strictly, strictly drinking.
Andrew?
Yeah. I'm 92% sure.
Okay.
I know all the details. I just not sure I got the right answer on the board.
All right.
I'm going with a different battle.
I got a bonus.
Okay.
Okay. So I just read you.
Oh, I know
this ancient Greek battle fought in 490 BC. The legend of a messenger who ran a great distance to announce victory and inspired the modern Olympic sport. What word did he yell?
Oh.
So what word did he yell that means victory?
Ah, there it is.
Do you have to get the first one right to get the second one?
Yes. Yes. You got to get the first to get the bonus. So we're asking for what the battle was, and then what word, which is Greek for victory, did Pheidippides. I'm going to go say his name is Pheidippides. There's a lot of P's and D's in that name. Pheidippides exclaimed when he got to Athens.
Say that with a southern drawl.
Pheidippides. My mouth quit working when I just tried to do that. I think I actually inherited a lisp somehow. Pheidippides.
Can you do me a favor and read it one more time?
All right. This is taking longer than I thought it would for this one. So we're looking for an ancient Greek battle fought in 490 BC. It's famously associated with the legend of a messenger who ran a great distance to announce victory and inspired the modern Olympic sport. As a bonus, what word did he yell to exclaim victory? All right. I got to say, here we go.
Here
Let's
we go.
Reveal.
I do not have the battle.
Let's reveal. We got Marathon and Nike. We got Thermopylae and Nike. And we have Greco-Roman War and Nike. We have one fully correct answer with bonus, and that would be Andy. Yeah, it was baby. The Battle of Marathon, and it was Nike.
26.2 miles away.
Yes. So does he get 2 points?
He gets he gets two.
Say it again.
You get two.
Yeah, I do.
You get two. Nike.
Nike. Yeah, you threw me there for a minute.
I thought all of you would know it was Marathon. Well, right.
No, that part. But the Nike part, I was trying to dance between whether the I don't think he was a god. He was a mortal.
He was.
He was a god.
Well, I don't. I mean, maybe half.
I thought his name was Nike.
Who? Pheidippides? We talking about Pheidippides right now?
Pheidippides?
Was he mortal or not? You're saying he's something more than that? He's
starting to get way up there.
You try to say Pheidippides.
I love it.
Anyway, so no, you were saying.
I was thinking maybe it was his name. So when you started to say, what was he shouting? That
I knew his name wasn't Nike, but there is a god. Nike's the god of victory, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go.
Greek mythology.
Yeah. Well, you guys seem to know about this, even though not all of you got it right.
Thanks.
Forrest Gump. Just kept running.
I don't actually have a fun fact about the actual Battle Marathon or anything. Oh, I mean, instead, I always found I've heard this story before about the 1904 Olympics in St. Louis. Do you guys know about this?
I don't know.
So the marathon was brutal there, right? Mm-hmm. 32 runners started. Only 18 of them dropped out. That's how brutal it was.
Wow.
So we're talking late August,
the Olympics.
Super hot.
Wow, there
the winner, who was actually dragged across the finish line, was given shots. It was a mixture of egg whites, brandy, and strychnine.
What?
That was the potion they were giving runners to keep them going, I guess.
After the fact?
No, during the race. One guy jumped in a car to try to get some of the race done. Like, people were just falling out.
Going back then?
And then
in St. Louis?
Like the officials that were driving were kicking up all this dust. They had like sulfuric dust or something like that. So people had lung damage.
Good Lord.
It was terrible.
How did humans survive?
Yeah, I don't know.
How are we still here?
We tried to do a lot of really bad things to each other over the years.
Oh, they did offer water twice along the marathon route.
That was nice of them.
In August, in the armpit of America.
Yes. All right, let's go to question number 8, then we'll do another score check. Brian, this is your alley right here. This is World War II.
Okay.
What country's invasion carried out by Nazi Germany on September 1st, 1939, is considered the event that triggered the start of World War II in Europe? So I'm looking for the country that was invaded by Nazi Germany on September 1st, 1939, that is considered what triggered the start of World War II in Europe. So what do them Nazis do? Where do they go?
Darn Nazis.
Yeah. Kelly's good. At least it looks.
I think I have it.
It feels good. Brian.
Hundo.
Good.
Between a couple, and I'm just going to write one down.
All right. Andy's got an answer.
Was Doc? That your inner Brad Pitt a minute ago?
Yes, it was.
Thanks.
I like killing all Nazis. Right.
So one more time before we reveal, we're looking for the country that Nazi Germany invaded on September 1st, 1939, that is considered the event that triggered the start of World War II. Let's reveal. I have Poland from Scott, from Kelly, dang, from Brian.
The other one.
Andy shanked it with Italy. The correct answer is Poland.
Okay, what's the bonus question? I need another.
I don't have one. I don't have a bonus on this one, buddy. I'm sorry. I think I only did the two bonuses.
Terrible.
Brian, do you know what's interesting about this invasion? Do you know the story? I'm just curious because like you're truly
the actual invasion.
So it's actually called. There was like part of it is called like a fake attack.
They didn't know where they were.
No. So these are diabolical. The Nazis are in order to justify this invasion. They basically pretended that Poland attacked like their radio station. They actually did a Polish broadcast like saying how bad the Nazis were. And to make it even more real, they dressed up concentration camp prisoners in Polish uniforms and killed them to make it look like there was a small battle to justify invading Poland. That's how diabolical they were. It was a complete farce that led to them invading Poland.
There were concentration camps prior to September 1st, 1939?
That's what I got. Concentration camp prisoners in Polish uniforms.
Actually, that they were starting to round up
internally. Internally. Okay, yeah.
I just watched a movie last night about, it's called A Boy in the Woods. It's a true story. It's very interesting. A little boy in Poland lives in the woods for like a year. Like he was like
during
12
that
or 13 years old.
Like during World War II? Like
he was with his mom and his sister in a camp, and they were going to transport him, and she made him like leave, run.
Nice.
Run through the gates, go. And he survived in the woods.
Oh, wow.
When he was out there, found a baby after some Jews were killed. Wow. Took the baby in, took it to the home where he was hiding at one point. Anyway, at the end of the movie, they show actual footage of him reuniting with that baby like in 2019.
No kidding.
Cow. Insane. Yeah, it's a crazy
story. Highly recommend?
No, the movie's movie good. Sucked. No, the movie's, it's good. It's not great, honestly, but the story's amazing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, like the end when they show him like reunite, it's insane.
Yeah. Tearjerker, I bet.
Oh, it is. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Well, that was eight. Kelly, good. What do we got for a score check?
We got some movement on the board. Brian has two. Scott has three.
Hey.
I have six. And Andy has seven.
Man, that was the other one in my head. I outthought my... Oh, dang it. Come on.
All right.
I'm ready. Let's go.
Let's see here. Number nine. Which upright early human ancestor, known for its endurance, use of tools, and long migration out of Africa, emerged nearly 2 million years ago? So, upright early human ancestor, known for endurance, use of tools, and long migration out of Africa, emerged nearly 2 million years ago, if you believe science. Andy, still riding. Yeah. Kelly, you're locked, it looks like.
Yes.
I might out
Brian,
myself again.
Yeah,
it
you're good.
Matter. At this point, it's I'm out.
Sometimes anyway. You play for the love of the game, B.
Yeah, baby. Yeah,
sometimes you do
I just
that.
Don't have an answer, though.
All right. Doc, you got an answer?
I put something down.
All right. Everybody has an answer? Let's reveal. I'll start with you, Andy. We have the Neanderthal. No. Neanderthal. Kelly, no. Neanderthal. No. It's Homo erectus.
Homo erectus.
We're talking erectus.
I had a feeling, Nick. And because it's Nick, put it in there. Because
upright.
It's a 13-year-old giggle, right? God dang it. That was the other one I almost put down.
It was an upright human. The erectus part. That's what you guys missed. You missed that key point right there.
Say it with a southern drawl.
I don't think I really have a southern drawl. Erectus.
Erectus.
Homo erectus.
Homo. Great. Thank you, B.
No,
Homo
it's Zach Galifianakis in like the when he does his.
I love that. I love that.
The campaign.
Yeah.
Homo erectus. So they're said to be the first human species to migrate out of Africa, develop modern human-like body proportions, innovators of stuff. I don't know.
Why would a giraffe wear high heels? Tools.
Likely the first species to use controlled fire, possibly even for cooking. Yeah.
Okay.
So there you go. Homo erectus.
Yep.
All right. So it comes down to this. We got question 10. I got a 1-point game. You guys ready?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right. Which ancient Greek philosopher is credited with first writing about the city of Atlantis, describing its history and destruction in his dialogues Timaeus and Critias?
The worst part about that is, like, all those guys, I can name several of them, right. But I can't, even if you had a crossboard of names to what and they what did. They did, I couldn't.
There's one, I've heard of this that this philosopher, like, actually wrote in great detail of the city of Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Like, described it, that kind of thing. That's why some people still...
Can you read it one more time?
Sure. We're looking for an ancient Greek philosopher that's credited with first writing about the city of Atlantis, also known as the Lost City of Atlantis.
Okay.
Describing history and destruction in his dialogues, Timaeus and Critias. I don't know what either. I actually looked up how to say those words. And I still probably got them wrong.
Yeah. I'm in agony.
Andy does
right
not
now.
Feel good. Brian does have an answer. Kelly, you got an answer?
I do have.
Because it all comes down to this, nobody seems very confident. Doc,
no, I'm not confident. There's one I want to write down. I have no idea how to spell it. Like, you wouldn't know who I was. Okay.
All right.
Trying to say.
You can spell it phonetically. I mean,
or just say it.
Good thing you're not in the game anymore.
Yeah, I'm not.
Yeah. All right, let's go ahead and reveal. We have Oedipus. We have Socrates from Brian. Oedipus was from Andy, by the way. We have Plato from Kelly and Socrates from, or Socrates for some.
Socrates.
It's Plato.
Oh, yes.
Kelly, baby.
Well done.
Coming in at the end.
I would have gone Aristotle if I went with a different name, so I wouldn't have got there. Plato was down the list for me.
It was between Plato and Socrates for me, but I think Socrates was much later. But I don't know the time. I mean,
there's no time frame for this, but yeah, Plato did not intend, many scholars at least believe that Plato did not intend for Atlantis to be a historical account, but rather a cautionary moral tale. You know, like Atlantis got too big for their britches, right. Is what they say, but... I think I've heard or read that somewhere where he actually describes it in detail that a lot of people think it actually exists.
Hmm.
The city is just truly lost right now. It's in the water somewhere.
Yeah.
And a toy that kids play with a lot.
Play-Doh.
Play-Doh. Okay. I was wondering where you're going with that.
I was thinking Atlantis. I didn't know where you were at.
All right.
Scott got my trivia.
Good job.
I get a point.
That is 10 questions. Kelly. Final score check, please.
After 10, Andy's got his head in his hand.
Yep.
Brian has 2. Mm-hmm. Scott has 3. And Andy and myself both are tied with 7.
So we're going to a tiebreaker.
We sure are.
Oh, baby.
All right. Have you prepared for such an occasion?
I did.
Of course.
And it's going to be right as many. So how long do we want to give for that? We've done this before. I'm trying to remember how long we did it before.
When I did trees, I think I did either 15 or 30 seconds, something in that realm.
Okay.
Felt
like it was shorter.
You could say more like how many, is there a total, is there a max number?
You guys won't get that many in 15 seconds. What do you think, Scott, 15 seconds?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know what the question is.
Yeah.
Sure,
yeah, you're about to find out.
Yeah, right.
It's really simple.
Oh, there you go.
So in 15 seconds, write as many sports that don't use a ball. Go. Oh, they're writing.
Oh, that's good. I like
he's that. Locked. That's Kelly's intense. Andy, he's doing well. Sports that don't use a ball. 10 seconds. 13, 14, stop. 3. Turn your boards. We have 3 from Andy. We have hockey, sprinting, and swimming. That is 3. 3 from Kelly, hockey, curling, and track. You guys only came up with 3.
I had room for another. I just couldn't get there.
Man. That surprises me.
Is track rugby technically a ball?
Track uses a ball.
Huh?
Track uses a ball.
Track?
Ooh, yeah. I am totally in support of Brian's argument.
There is track and field, but like he could have put...
That's field.
He could have put 100 track meter. He could have put 100 ball. Meter. He could have put the marathon. He could have put all these different running events, but he just picked track, which technically don't use a ball.
Those are on the track. So that's field. That's the field part.
Oh.
He was getting real nitpicky, but okay.
Oh, how are we feeling about this?
What's the matter? That
track
was
and field. Track is the track. That's the running.
Yeah.
Field is the part of the shot put. Yeah. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But you don't have track without the field. It's always track and field. It's one sport. It's not, you know what I'm saying?
No,
it's one event. There's
20 different sports.
So if I name long jump, triple jump, high jump, are those 3 different things?
Yes.
Yeah.
Those are all individual events and sports, right. Just because they fall under the umbrella of track and field. Yeah. So you guys end up both with three?
Yeah. Have you prepared for another occasion?
Sure. I got another one.
All right.
We're going to do another name as many.
All right.
Since it went so well the first time.
Well, I didn't prepare a separate question, so we're going to go with this. All right. Name as many in 15 seconds sports you can play indoors. Five seconds left. Three, two, one, stop. We got four from Kelly. Yeah, we got five from Andy. So we got football, soccer, basketball, baseball, and track. Those are true.
He's got five, too, though, according to you guys. He's got one, two, three, four, five.
Track and field's the same.
Track and field's the same.
If track and field's the same, then it was over last time. That's what I was trying to tell you guys.
Did you write track and field last time, too?
I wrote track.
I just won the argument. Thank you.
Well, either way, then. If the track doesn't count, then I won last time anyway.
I'm giving Andy the win.
All right. What do you say?
Oh, that was chaos.
Nice work, Nicholas. And Kelly, you were a valiant opponent in there.
Congratulations. That was
interesting. He's out.
Congratulations.
If Andy would have gotten Poland, we would never would be in this
situation. Well, that is 100% that is right.
That is true.
Terrible.
Yeah. What did you guys think of the episode? Cool with it? Not bad?
I loved it, obviously.
I dig it.
I like history. I was a history major before I turned to math.
Is that right?
Yeah, I knew that.
I became a junior. I was on my path in my history major. I was halfway through my junior year before I decided to change. Oh. And those tracks are about as opposite as you get.
So. What are you going to do with that? Teach? Become a curator at a museum?
Yeah, right.
Indiana
with
Jones?
My wife, who's the art history major.
Tenure professor.
Learning something new about Andy.
There we go.
You get less interesting every day.
Amen. History professor.
Well, good job, everybody.
A lot of tweed.
Yeah, patches on the elbows. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Nick. That was fun.
No, I enjoyed it.
Good stuff.
So, all right. I'm going to let you end the show for us.
End the show. No closer tonight, huh?
I mean, if you guys wanted to, but of the 10 questions that we went through, of those 10, which one would you want to experience or be a part of or visit if you could? Any of those that piqued your interest enough. I mean, Brian wished he was there for Nazi Germany. I know
be
that.
In Poland on September 1st, 1990.
World War II, absolutely.
That's your era.
Not necessarily be there for discovery, but just ancient Egypt. Maybe for that discovery.
Yeah, maybe be able to look through a lens and see that.
Yeah, and just seeing all the stuff that they discovered. But there's more to be discovered, too, I believe.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Everything you just said, double for me, except in the ancient Greek civilization.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I mean, all these names that we still know from so long ago, like what were they doing that they were building these Mensa members all the time, right?
Incredible.
Yeah.
Just incredible. Incredible. Well, also, was the rest of the world pretty stupid, too? Because this stuff was all new, maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
All that olive oil, maybe. I don't know. Omega-3s or something.
Sure.
Doc, what about you?
I mean, I'll go back to, I guess, question one. I like to learn more about the priests. Discovered is the right word, but, you know.
He proposed the theory
of Big Bang as a possibility.
Cool. Yeah. Boy, he probably caught a lot of flack for that.
Surprised he wasn't arrested.
Yeah.
Or locked in a room like Copernicus or Galileo.
Maybe he was. We don't know the
name
story.
Name dropping.
Nick didn't drop us any... any flavor information
text.
On his demise, so we don't know.
I didn't look up his demise. I figured he just lived happily ever after.
You did a good job, buddy.
Thanks.
Yeah. Did you like an opening like that?
I felt unprepared, and I mean, if it comes out okay, great. I mean, I'll try it again, but
simply make it look effortless. I promise you.
Okay.
No, you got a taste.
I got a taste of it. But
that's it.
Wrap it up.
That's it. That's going to do it for this episode of the Ultimate Trivia Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe, tell a friend, and leave us a review. We'll see you next time with more trivia and more fun. And until then, keep your brain sharp and your bellies laughing.
Dude, that is a fantastic shirt.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. You can get one yourself. You didn't know this?
No, I didn't. Where do you get that?
We got a merch store. You can find the link on our website. We've partnered with Warrior Logo Wear, a veteran-owned custom apparel shop, and they've created a whole store for us. Doc, didn't you use this for your daughter's soccer team?
Oh, yeah, definitely, because they have no minimum order. So if I just need to buy a couple shirts, don't have to worry. It's not going to cost me anything extra.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Check them out yourself. You got a small business like we do or a sports program, you want some custom apparel, check out warriorlogowear.com, and they'll get you all hooked up.